This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome back to the Hockey News Podcast, presented by BetMGM. I'm Mike Stevens. This is Ryan Kennedy. Now, we're recording this on Tuesday. Training camps open on Wednesday. We've already done all our division previews. I think we've teed up the NHL season to an appropriate degree. Yes. So what we're going to do on this episode, we're obviously going to cover a couple of the big sort of news stories that have happened in the past week since we've been talking to you. But then we're going to open it up to the fans, to our adoring listeners, to basically just do a mailbag episode. It doesn't have to be about hockey. Some will be about hockey. Some will be everything, just to get to know Ryan and I. You know, it's a nice little thing. But first, we have to talk about, I think might be the shortest coaching tenure in NHL history. Truly, I would say maybe the most embarrassing coaching tenure in NHL history is Mike Babcock, who in the span of a week had his entire tenure with the Columbus Blue Jackets wiped away. First on last Tuesday, the Spitting Checklist podcast came out with allegations that Mike Babcock was, you know, like rubbing players the wrong way, making them show, like invading their privacy, particularly making them show him photos in their camera roll, and then like hooking it up to the TV in his office, basically, so we could go through it, which is a thing that, as my boss, Ryan, that would really creep me out if you did.
Fair.
And then after that, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets and Captain Boone Jenner came out with a statement saying, yeah, but it was like more of a positive thing, and everyone thought it was going away. And then the NHLPA got involved, started looking into that, and apparently a lot more came out of it, to the point where on Sunday, Mike Babcock resigned as head coach before even running not just a game, but a practice. So he was hired on July 1st, so it was just over 3 months, really, that he was in the role. An absolute sort of disastrous thing to happen right before training camp and the season starts. Ryan, what are your initial thoughts on this?
Well, there's a lot to unpack. You know, first, the speed of it is quite blinding. Just anecdotally, our new issue, Meet the New Guys, we actually had an article about Mike Babcock, which was very interesting, written by Ken Campbell. Mm-hmm. You know, he mentioned that the Columbus Blue Jackets, when they were looking for a new coach, they consulted Ken Hitchcock, mm-hmm. who obviously was the most successful coach they've ever had in the past. And he basically said he had a list of one. It was Mike Babcock, who is obviously an old friend of his. You know, they've golfed together, things of that. You know, they've coached together internationally. So bit of a red flag there where, you know, you're just kind of consulting one person.
Who's his friend.
Who's his friend. Mm-hmm.
And who also has a reputation as being a bit of a hard butt, if you will.
An old school guy, yeah. So, you know, I highly recommend, obviously, picking up the new issue. I also wrote a column at the end of this issue mm-hmm. talking about how it's fascinating to me that this sort of, like, old boys network mm-hmm. in hockey, they seem to value second chances more than first chances.
Yes.
And obviously Mike Babcock is one of them, and then obviously Bill Peters as well, going to the WHL in Lethbridge. And so I don't even have this issue at my house yet.
Mm-hmm.
And already Mike Babcock's gone.
Like that's already it's out of date, yeah.
That's how fast this mm-hmm. happened, is we couldn't even get the issue out during his tenure.
Yeah.
I would say on the positive side of the ledger, Pascal Vincent, who's replacing him, is a coach that we've had on our radar for quite some time now, mm-hmm. where he's had a lot of success in the AHL, and it felt like he was one of those guys that deserved a chance.
That was ready, you know?
Yeah, to get his own bench. You know, I would say Ryan Huska, who was hired by the Flames, mm-hmm. Would be also in that category.
And
Spencer Carberry
like that,
in Washington, So if there's any silver lining here, it's that maybe Columbus should have just hired Pascal Vincent in the first place to be their coach. But, you know, one other avenue I'll go down here mm-hmm. is how well this reflects on the new NHLPA brain trust.
That's what I was going to bring up, so I'm glad you're bringing it up.
Yeah, so, you know, Marty Walsh, the new leader, obviously went hard on this. Ron Hainsey as well, who it seems early on in Walsh's tenure, Hainsey was a guy that he sort of earmarked and said, okay, this is a guy that I like, that I can work mm-hmm. with, that we're on the same wavelength. And so they went in, they took it seriously, which is very important.
Yes.
And
but they got boots on the ground too.
They got boots on the ground. Yeah, exactly. They went in fast, and you know they got the answers they were looking for, and they supported the players that were concerned about what had gone down with Babcock. So I think this is a tremendously positive thing for the union, where the players have concrete evidence where it's like, if we have a problem, we know Marty Walsh and Ron Hainsey have our back.
Yes. That is that was another main point I was going to bring up, so I'm glad you did. Like, this, look, it's all hypothetical at this point, but this, there's a 0% chance this happened, this unfolds the way it did with Donald Fehr. 0%.
Quite possibly, like, if you look at some of the allegations involving Kyle Beach and all that,
it would have been a series of emails and, you know, like some jibber jabber, and then it would have gone away. Whereas Marty Walsh, like, we got the allegations came out on Tuesday. Walsh, on Tuesday, I believe it was reported, like traveled to Columbus along with his cohort, interviewed all the players, spoke with the NHL on Friday, and by Saturday, Columbus was then, after the results were sort of, formulated, Saturday, as the reporting suggests, Columbus was already, had already made up their mind and was working with Babcock for a stepping down plan. Mm. And then Sunday it happened. Like, that's a span of 6 days, basically, where you go from allegations on a podcast that, let's be frank, not a ton of people take when it comes to journalism, at least, that's not where you go for your breaking news stories.
Right.
And credit to the Spin Chicklets podcast. I'm not a huge fan of Barstool, but they clearly have cultivated a space where players feel comfortable to talk about that. And I think that's very important.
Yeah.
A little concerning that, you know, that's the avenue that the players are opposed to, a league-mandated one. That speaks, I think, worse on the league than it does on Spin Chicklets.
Right.
But, immediately he they boots on the ground with a team. They got to the bottom of it. And then I also think the statement, the fact that there was a statement that was released by Marty Walsh, because every NHLPA statement, at least, and this is not the Donald Fehr bashing podcast, but it seemed like every statement under Donald Fehr was a word salad that really accomplished nothing. It was always, we've reviewed this and we've come to, there's no substantial evidence and there's no further comment. Mm-hmm. Whereas the statement that Marty Walsh released, it was we are glad to hear that Columbus has done this. There, upon the evidence we collected in our investigation, there was clearly no recourse for him to, or there was clearly no way he could continue as a coach. I'm glad our players need to be treated with respect.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of interesting in terms of the Donald Fehr tenure. Mm-hmm. It was almost more of a peacetime role where, getting through the pandemic, that was obviously huge, and the PA and the league had to work together
to
get the bubbles going.
And they signed a new CBA.
They got a new CBA. Yeah. So I think that, he had his strengths in terms of collective bargaining and things like that. But I think with Marty Walsh, you're getting more of, I don't know if it's
an
fair
advocate.
To say, an advocate, and somebody that obviously has huge labor ties going way back, his entire career, basically. So I think you're getting a different kind of leader, and it's good to have those different viewpoints. And, with Walsh, like I said, I think he really stepped up here and has put an early stamp on what his tenure is going to be. It's interesting, too, to get a little more into the political where, when they were talking about, Don Fehr's replacement, Matthew Schneider was a big name, and he was obviously a former player who knew the union side that way and had been involved with the union for years. I know there were some concerns about, can he go head-to-head with the owners and Gary Bettman?
He cannot.
Right. So he might have been the choice for a lot of players, but I think, on the sort of legal and strategy side, there was some reticence there. And now Schneider's, stepped away.
Exactly.
From the
union. So, he didn't get picked, and clearly there might have been some.
Yeah, there was obviously a different, philosophy in how to go forward. And that's fine.
This happens
everywhere. But it is very interesting to see this first sort of move by Marty Walsh. And I'll put Ron Hainsey in there as well, where clearly, full marks to them for how this went down. And I think, the conversation now is, we know Babcock's done.
Oh, for good.
Done.
Yeah.
Unless he wants to go to, the KHL. But it is very interesting to see this generational gap.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is a learning experience for the whole hockey culture where, it's not an age thing, right? Because we have some coaches that are older that players love, but it is a mindset thing. And I think what we're seeing here is not only, you know, sort of culturally where phones mean a different thing
yes.
to young people than it does to older generations, mm-hmm. But also how you approach players, the power dynamics, and being aware of those power dynamics. And I would hazard to say being more collaborative.
And boundaries.
And boundaries as yes. well. These are all lessons for the NHL as a whole right now mm-hmm. When it comes to the coaches and how they relate to their players.
Absolutely. And it's, you're right, it is NHL-wide. And it's not, you're right, it's not really an age thing. It's that, and it's not cancel culture, woke culture, whatever. It's
right.
that as society as a whole has progressed, our standards for how we will allow ourselves to be treated have thankfully risen, you know, like in any workplace now, like there you, and even like, even when I was playing hockey, like I had coaches who were like the Mike Babcocks and more of like the yellers, you know, the trying to rule with the iron fist. And I'm 27, so I'm roughly around that age of where the young NHLers are. Some are, you know, 5-6 years younger, but like that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Like if I came into work every day and you were yelling at me about yeah. everything, I would be a less productive employee, and the bar is very low right now. Let's be clear. But I'd be a less productive employee right now yeah. than I would be, you know, than I am now. Mm. What boggles my mind and I understand why they're not doing it now, because in the statement, the Columbus Blue Jackets owner said that we don't foresee any further changes to our hockey operations leadership.
Right.
Any further disruptions would be detrimental to our team as we prepare for the season. So
right.
I understand that, but like in my opinion, Jarmo Kekalainen should have followed Mike Babcock right out the door.
I'll go even further. I think John Davidson should have.
Yeah.
I think it should have been a clean sweep based
yeah.
on yeah, just how everything went down.
The entire hiring process was botched from the second they started because, like you said,
yeah.
all they did was it was also reported. So they Mike Babcock, by the way, to put in context, he had been banished from the NHL, and it is
not officially,
but I mean like in terms of like the boys' club or whatever, like
yeah.
banished. Sort of like he had been ostracized or you know, basically. And it is extreme. Like, Peter Chiarelli is going to join the Ottawa Senators front office this week. That's being reported. Peter Chiarelli, who did one of the worst jobs as a GM, he lucked into a generational, a guy who might end up being the best hockey player of all time. And he lucked into that and surrounded him with nothing and got fired. And they missed the playoffs and all that. Like, one of the worst GMs of the modern era. He's getting a job. It's in today's NHL. It is impossible to get ostracized from the old boys club if you're in the old boys club.
Right.
And yet Babcock was such a jerk during his tenure across multiple organizations that he did. And coming to Columbus, them hiring him, Columbus clearly realized, oh, this is a name brand coach that we otherwise wouldn't be able to get in our market, but we're capitalizing on the fact that like he is a bit down on his luck. This is his last chance. And he got to bring him in, the hiring process was asking a former fellow hard-headed coach his opinion on him, who is also a very good friend
yeah.
and a golf buddy,
yeah.
and apparently another Hall of Fame caliber player, who are not the types of players that Babcock has had his spats with.
Right.
The types of players that Babcock has earned this reputation as being just like a guy who plays mind games with you and like abuses you mentally is with the rookies. It's with the veterans on their last legs. It's with the depth players. The star players are different.
Yeah.
It's a lot like I watched the Swamp Kings documentary on Netflix for the University of Florida, and Urban Meyer in that he said, you know, like he basically set up a white table with like linen cloth and everything, and his stars would eat there. They'd eat steak, and then all the other role players would eat hamburgers and hot dogs, whatever. He said, I'm going to treat my stars like stars and my poop like poop. And if you don't want to be treated like poop anymore, become a star. That doesn't work these days.
Yeah.
Babcock did that, but but in this sort of like wide net casting hiring process to make sure it was okay to bring this guy back and welcome him back into a locker room that's a very sacred space and keep and have him be in charge of you know, like young adults and teenagers in their formative years.
Yeah.
They asked his buddy, who does the same stuff as him, and a Hall of Fame caliber player, and then they tried to defend it, and there was all of this talk about Mike Babcock's got a mental health plan that he's gonna like, and he wants players to tell him when they stepped over the line so he can like correct himself. And he didn't even run a practice. He didn't even get to training camp. That is the most embarrassing saga, I think, in recent NHL history when it comes to coaches. And the GM, when you hire someone like that, you stake, especially at the stage that Yarmo was at, because he's won one playoff series in 10 years as Columbus. They were terrible last year after they were supposed to not be that good, and he had injuries, whatever.
Yeah.
So you stake your like status to that hiring. There's a you could have hired Pascal Vincent, probably gotten the same stuff. Instead, you hired Mike Babcock. So you're like, I'm taking a swing, and if I'm gonna go down, I'm gonna go down with the ship.
Right.
So if this doesn't work out, if it's a disaster, it's on you. And it blew up before he even stepped on the ice.
So if you're going to eventually dismiss Jarmo Kekalainen and John Davidson,
which is like gonna happen eventually. Like everyone gets fired, but you have to think.
Yeah, I mean, personally, my suggestion would be you go Rick Nash as president, franchise legend, has been in sort of front office scenarios with the club already. And then you go Ryan Martin as GM. Mm-hmm. He has been an assistant GM in the NHL for quite a while now. He has a Stanley Cup from his time with the Detroit Red Wings.
Yep.
He's worn a lot of hats. And it's funny, we always talk about coaches, but it's like, who are the next GMs? I think Martin would be a tremendous candidate.
Yeah, we all know what happened last time they hired someone with the Stanley Cup with the Detroit Red Wings.
Right.
It worked out great.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. All right, next topic here, Ryan, is that you were big on the prospect tournament.
Indeed.
You it was Buffalo, right?
It was Buffalo.
Yes. Yep. So you were there. You got to see it all firsthand just for, you know, just a little bit. Tell us your biggest takeaways. Sorry, I was getting emotional about that. Tell us your biggest takeaways, you know, what you saw, some guys that stood out, and then we'll hop into a mailbag.
Yeah, for sure. So there was six teams in Buffalo, and some more laden with prospects than others. The Buffalo Sabres, who were obviously hosting, had an excellent squad.
Absolutely.
And I think the player that stood out the most for me was Matt Savoy. And unfortunately, he got banged up in the last game, hurt his shoulder. But in the first game against Montreal, he was just deadly. He had a couple of highlight reel goals, really used his speed well, and I think that bodes very well for him. Now, again, hurting his shoulder, who knows what that means for training camp and where he ends up, because he is still junior eligible, which means he would go to the Wenatchee Wild in the WHL that used to be the Winnipeg Ice. But he will also, I would think, be crucial for Canada's World Junior team. I went on the Friday, Buffalo played Montreal, and I blogged about David Reinbacher, who was, of course, Montreal's first-round pick this year. And I think it was very good for Reinbacher to be there. You could see all the good tools he had. Very mobile, you know, he's got a big frame, got a great shot, but he had never really played in North America before. He was at the World Juniors with Austria, but they got caved in.
So yes,
assessment of what he was capable
Reinbacher of. Reinbacher was, I remember there was like one day where Reinbacher was literally the only reason we were going to go watch this game.
It
was
like made sure he was going to be in the lineup and walked the 2 minutes from the hotel.
Yeah. If he was not in that lineup, it was a relegation game, but if he was not in that lineup, we would have just watched TV in the hotel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So he was a point.
None of the media would have shown up, but he played, so there was like eight of us there.
Yeah.
So, you know, he got knocked around a bit. I thought he struggled a bit in that first game, but it's okay because he needed to see what the smaller ice game was all about. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a very good learning experience for him. Simone Nemec played for New Jersey. He looked very good. I think just it's going to be a numbers game where he probably goes back to Utica.
Absolutely.
But talking to Utica coach Kevin Dineen, who was coaching the prospects, it was interesting to see the work they already did with Nemec last year in the AHL, where, you know, sometimes he needs to simplify things where he doesn't always have to be that, you know, that offensive guy from the blue line. And, you know, Nemec talked about, you know, the physicality after the game when he was talking to us, just getting used to that. And that's something he's been working on. So I think a lot of great lessons there. I'll also just quickly, you know, when we're on the topic of prospect tournaments, you know, Connor Bedard, obviously, you know, made his Blackhawks debut.
What a debut it was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and I wasn't there, but just watching the clips, I'm going to say now, I think what happens in the first half of the season, Connor Bedard's going to get like 25 goals in the first kind of like 41 games or so, because NHL teams, they've heard all the hype.
Yes.
But once you actually experience his release, you don't understand it.
Yes.
And that's what the goalies, and obviously these are prospect goalies, but you just don't get it until you see it live. So he's going to, somehow he's going to surprise people.
That first goal that he scored, and I'm going to say that first goal because everyone knows what I'm talking about in his debut, his angle of release, I don't know how a puck can go off a stick the way it did, like, at the angle it was shot. It was like he was shooting it. It was like he was shooting it in one direction, but the puck, like, went. He curved the bullet, like, from Wanted. Like, it was crazy. That is. I tweeted, like, you know, with that those clips being like, Connor Bedard going up against, like, prospect tournament invitees is like Shaq going one on one against, like, current day Danny DeVito. Like, in a one on one game. Like, it is brutal.
Yeah, and you know, we know Bedard, he has that really whippy stick. He uses the flex that's like 60 or something.
Mm-hmm. That's a child's flex, by the way.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
For real. Like, my stick when I was playing like Tyke was 50 flex.
Yeah, and it's funny because I know I've talked to people at Sherwood and they were like, yeah, it's incredible like what he can do, but it's what makes him comfortable.
Yeah.
And obviously it works for him and he uses those different release points. So yeah, like, I don't know how many goals he's going to end with, but I think he's going to start off
really
on a tear because NHL goalies, as prepared
like,
as
what
they
just
might,
happened.
Yeah, it's going to be like Auston Matthews, you know, when he got to the NHL, where it's like you don't know until you see it, and then you have to adjust. And then real quickly, Adam Fantilli and Leo Carlson also looked really good in their prospect tournaments.
Man, Fantilli, like Bedard and Fantilli both having hat tricks in their debuts. That's pretty great, man.
Yeah, and I know Fantilli had like a 5-point game at 1 point for Columbus, but you see all the physical tools that he has, the speed, the size, the skill. And then Leo Carlson, you know, out west with Anaheim playing in that prospect tournament with all the other Pacific teams there. Again, you could see just the maturity to his game and the skill level, the hands in close, what he could do. So very exciting time.
It's awesome.
And it's funny, you know, I know some people are like, it's prospect tournaments, whatever. But
they matter, man.
It's just nice to see that start and to see what these kids are already capable of and for them to sort of get that little head start heading into their first real NHL training games.
Yeah, prospect tournaments matter, man. Like, it's a great opportunity to see these kids in what might be for a lot of them their first taste of just even like wearing, and my one critique would be I wish that teams would have like different jerseys for prospect tournaments, because I think it's important that like it would be a cool thing for them to be like, you got to earn this to wear this jersey.
Some teams do.
Like the Leafs, for example, have like practice jerseys.
And Pittsburgh, their team in Buffalo, which obviously the GM is Kyle Dubas, who was with the Leafs, they were wearing practice type jerseys. It wasn't the official Penguins jersey. I understand that, and it totally makes sense. But I also, like, when I was watching Dallas and Detroit in Traverse City, obviously on YouTube this year, it was fun to see, you know, like, the Detroit kids and the Dallas kids. It's like, hey, there's Logan Stankoven in a Dallas Stars jersey. Yeah. Like, that's fun as well.
All right, that's true. That's fair. Also, like, one note, if we're talking about prospect tournament jerseys, the Anaheim Ducks, who have an ad patch on one shoulder and an 30th anniversary patch on one shoulder, were forced and patches on both shoulders as well, were forced to put the A like right down like in the nipple area, and it looks horrible. There has to be some solution to that.
Adjustments
it
will
was,
be made
because like it was tough in the Cup final when like they had to put the Stanley Cup final patch and the A or the letter like next to each other just looked weird. This is like a whole new level. This like ruined my day when I saw it. It was bad. But yeah, that's great. All right, now let's go into our mailbag, Ryan. This is basically let's just answer questions.
Let's do
loosey goosey. Have a fun time. Right. We'll start with some hockey, I guess, sort of related questions. We can start off. You got one.
I did. Yeah, so this is from Facebook, and we have a question from Jason Hunter.
All right.
Says, I know my favorite team, the San Jose Sharks, are going through a rebuild. Realistically, how terrible are they going to be after losing Erik Karlsson, a.k.a. the only real offensive force the team had consistently? Also, realistically, when are they going to be good again? 5 years, 10 years, more than that, give me a glimmer of hope. So,
well, if we tell you more than 10 years, it's not a glimmer of hope.
Yeah, that exactly. Is, yeah. Yeah, I don't. It's not going to be that long.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Jason, I think the Sharks are going to be very bad this year. I mean, they do have Logan Couture. They do have Thomas Hurdle. So, I mean, they've got some guys. But other than that, I think this is going to be very much a transition year for the Sharks, where I want to see what William Eklund can do.
Absolutely.
Like, I want to see what some of those young kids can do. And I think a lot of it is going to hinge on a little bit of lottery luck. Where, and again, I've said this before.
They want to get Celebrini. Yeah.
Max Celebrini, who played for the San Jose Junior Sharks at one point when he was growing up, because his dad works for the Golden State Warriors. You know, Max Celebrini, originally from Vancouver, he is a center. He is tremendous. He will be at Boston University this year as a true freshman. He might miss a game or two due to an upper body injury. I think he had shoulder, might have had shoulder surgery or some kind of procedure in the summer. But at the least, he had something that he had to get worked on. So he might miss a game or two. But he would be perfect because you just drafted Will Smith, also a center. So you look at your future, you got to go down the middle. If you had Celebrini and Will Smith, that's a devastating 1-2 punch. If you don't get Celebrini, Cole Iserman is second.
Oh, yeah.
He is like...
He's really good.
He is like an Ovechkin-level shooter.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, one thing, I'm not saying he's going to be Ovechkin, but he is a goal scorer, and he doesn't have an office. Like, Ovechkin is an office, and he's very difficult. He's just impossible to stop from there. Cole Iserman will score from anywhere. So I think, you know, if you went, if you had a future that was sort of anchored by Will Smith and Cole Iserman, well, that's a pretty hot tandem right now. Or sorry, not right now, but for the future.
Yes.
So I think San Jose is going to need, I think 5 years is realistic, where you got to build up the pipeline a little bit more. You know, I'm sure Mike Greer will continue to take to make moves with an eye to the future as GM. But I think that, yes, they are going to be terrible. They might be, if not the worst team, then certainly in the 30s.
Yes.
But I think that should be part of the plan.
That, yeah, that's what they are. It's kind of what they're hoping for. Like, if they... Because there is definitely a ceiling to this roster. Like, there is, like, and that ceiling is maybe, like, I would say everything goes right. Like, literally everything goes right, like, 21st in the league. And but if they finish there, that's a disaster for them.
Right.
So they want to be bad. And they have the thing, the good news is you have a lot of money coming off the books next year. I'm looking at Cat Friendly right now. Shout out to Cat Friendly. They just launched a new NBA version of that, which is amazing. But, like, they have, like, Kevin LeBlanc. LeBlanc, Mike Hoffman, Anthony Duclair, Barabanov, and Oscar Lindblom, and also like Radim Šimek, all coming off the books next year. That's a lot of like late 20s to early 30s guys making, you know, from the 5 million to the 2.5 million sort of like types of contracts for players who don't deserve them that kill you. Because it's not the $11 million contracts that kill you. Those guys are almost always worth it. It's always the third liner who has like good shooting luck and ends up getting paid 3.5, and you're like, no, we have this like weird block that's like, and all of those guys are that basically that I just listed. Granlund, like, because he has 2 years left, like, that might be the worst contract in the league. Like, we were, I was debating this with a couple friends, like, oh, maybe it's Carey Price, maybe it's this, whatever. I'm like, Michael Granlund at two more years left at $5 million, at 31-year-old, that's one of the, like, he's the third highest paid forward on the team.
Yeah.
To be fair, you're right. They have some good prospects. They will add likely a top two pick, depending on where the lottery balls fall, really. But they will likely add a top two pick by the end of this season. And also, like, I like the bet they made on Filip Zadina. Like, I want to see what he's got in a different situation. Clearly, it just never worked in Detroit there. Like, for like, whether it was personality-wise, development-wise, he got yo-yoed a bunch. It just never worked. I'd like to see what he has there. He will likely have a bigger role. It's a... Look, I would say where they become, like, perennial playoff, like, a respectable team, honest to God, it might take, like, 4 years.
Certainly.
For them to, like, become a team where, like, you head into the season and you're like, oh, yeah, they'll make the playoffs, like, for sure.
Yeah, because they have to get to that sort of scrappy Sharks point.
Exactly.
Where it's like, ah, it's starting to get, like...
They got that dog in them,
Like, Ottawa and Buffalo are there now, where it's like, ooh, you got to be worried about those teams.
Exactly.
They're kind of intriguing.
Like, look over your shoulder type of teams. Like, oh, they're coming. Like, like the, you know, the objects in the rearview mirror, they're getting closer.
Exactly.
But it's just, you never know. You never know. It's going to be tough. All right, let's move on to another sort of like hockey-themed topic. This is from Simon Cooper on Twitter, at Scoop67. Very cool. Which NHL team do you either not buy the hype or don't understand why people are down on?
Okay. I would say, for me, I'm worried about Detroit.
Yes.
And I know...
Are people hyping Detroit, though?
Maybe not hyping, but I think they're waiting for the next step.
Mm-hmm.
And just talking to... I was talking to a fan the other day when I was in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. I happened to be a Red Wings fan. He's like, is this a playoff year? And I'm like, I would bump the brakes. Because I think Buffalo and Ottawa have leapfrogged mm-hmm. them. And just structurally, yes, they got Alex DeBrincat.
Yeah.
That's great. But structurally, I just don't know if they have the roster, you know, whether it's down the middle you do have Dylan Larkin, that's mm-hmm. fine, but I'm a little worried about their center depth
after him.
And then goaltending, you got Husso and James Reimer. I don't know if that's gonna do it in a division that has Tage Thompson,
Austin Matthews, David Pastrnak, Tim Stützle.
David Pastrnak. I don't know if that's going to do it for
all of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Tampa Bay Lightning, yeah, exactly. So that's a team where I'm a little bit worried about, because it doesn't feel like anybody's being hyped to an unnecessary degree, at least to me. But what's your answer?
See, I look at this question, I wonder, do I lean into my latest bit?
Uh-huh.
On Twitter, which is hating the Ottawa Senators.
Right.
Or just needling the Ottawa Senators and then posting a picture under that tweet that everyone freaks out about of Anthony Mackie doing a very coy smile that I like to do. I do think, and I picked the Ottawa Senators to make the playoffs, as the last wildcard team, but we need to absolutely pump the brakes. Also, we have breaking news coming in. Before I get into that, Braden Schenn has been named the captain of the St. Louis Blues.
There you go.
So there you go. That is a worthwhile pick, I would think. I just wanted to put it in there so our podcast is not out of date already. I'm going to say the Ottawa Senators are getting way too much hype.
Gotcha.
They have some very good pieces here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jacob Chychrun was exactly, like, if you watch the tape, I was calling for him to get Chychrun the entire season on this podcast.
Yeah.
I was like, he is the piece they need. They need that guy to take all of, because Thomas Chabot is not a great defensive defenseman. If you look at his numbers, he's not good in his own zone. But Chychrun, he's a lot more, like, solid there. They need another guy to at least extend the depth of that blue line. And they got him. It's great. Getting Tarasenko on a one-year deal, like that's going to be great. If they might lose another, if they might lose another top six guy for reasons that may or may not come out soon, that's a good guy to sort of have there. You know, Tim Stützle had a great season last year, and he's only going to get better. Brady Tkachuk is clearly, like, the team loves him. He's a great captain. He's scrappy. He's exactly what you want. Claude Giroux seems to be just the most consistent player in the league. He's still there. All of that, but. We got goaltending. Jonas Korpisalo hasn't been consistently good since, like, before we ever knew what social distancing was.
Uh-huh.
And they gave him a 5-year deal. And the last goalie that hadn't been very good, had shown flashes at the start of his career, but hadn't been good in multiple years, that they gave a 5-year deal to, or a deal that is over 5 years in length, was Matt Murray.
Right.
And that did not work out very well at all.
Yep.
And on top of that, too, I look after, like, anything after their top six. Like, first of all, also, none of these guys have done anything. Like we talk about, it's like, oh, yeah, this, no. Like, last year, they had a lot of the same guys.
Mm.
And they finished, like, 11th in the conference. They haven't made the playoffs. They were supposed to make the playoffs last year. The rebuild is over. They haven't. And also, like, they did lose Alex DeBrincat. Like, they added some guys, but they lost Alex DeBrincat.
Mm.
There's just a lot of... And I'm not a huge believer in DJ Smith after some of the decisions he's made. I think they'll be good, but, like, what I see on Twitter and what I see on social media is just, like, everyone hailing the Sens as, like, the newest, like, incoming dynasty. Like, I think their fans are letting this. I'm all for, like, getting excited for your team.
Sure.
But this fan base is, like, expecting cup or bust, like, this year. And I'm like, no. You guys, it will be eyebrow-raising if you make the playoffs. Like, it'll be like, oh, they did, huh? Like, if they make the playoffs, let alone, like, do anything in it. and almost all of your guys, save for like Tarasenko, because he actually like won a cup. Yep. Like, but other than that, like all of your guys are either young or veterans who haven't done anything. Mm. And you bet all on a goalie who had like 11 good games with the Los Angeles Kings last year, yeah. and then faded completely in the playoffs, and you gave him a 5-year deal. Right. Like, that's tough. I don't know. And on top of that, you're hiring Peter Chiarelli, so maybe temper the expectations there. But yeah, that's my team where it's like, I don't necessarily buy the hype. I buy in that they'll be better this year.
Yeah.
I don't buy that that they will be as good as maybe some are thinking.
Gotcha.
All right. Let's move on to some more non-hockey questions, shall we? Let's go. And this one is from this was also from Simon Cooper. Number one, what are your top three highlights of your off season?
Oh, that's a good one. All right. So I would say number one, did a family road trip. Mm-hmm. We went down ultimately to Morgantown, West Virginia. So I got a West Virginia pennant for my collection. Mm-hmm. But also we went to Cooper's Rock State Park, which was literally, not figuratively, mm-hmm. literally breathtaking. Just an incredible vista. Really cool, like, state park. And it was free, which was very nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we walked around there for a while. But the actual Cooper's Rock, where you stare out and you see, like, this whole mm-hmm. valley and river and stuff, that was amazing. So that would be number one. Number two would be finishing Tears of the Kingdom.
Yep.
That was my big video game project. It was fantastic. And then I would say number three would be my wife just got me a Pittsburgh Pirates pillbox hat. The
Ooh,
one that's flat.
Yeah,
on the
I love
top.
That. Yeah.
Yes. So now I can be like 70s, 80s Pirates, but also I can pretend that I'm Rocky George, the guitarist from Suicidal Tendencies.
That sounds awesome. Yes. That is great. Okay, so for me, my top three highlights. Number one, I'm not sure I told the story on the podcast, but the sort of courtship between me and the cat that lives in my building.
Right.
I'm not sure if I've talked about it on the podcast, but there is a lovely, gorgeous, who is now, I've learned, is a 10-year-old cat named Missy who lives in my building. And when I first moved in a calendar year ago, like she was the most skittish cat I've ever met. Like she would run away whenever, like she'd look at you and then she'd bolt. And it didn't matter who. The only person, I didn't even like see her owner, who is like my neighbor down the hall, who I only recently like talked to and learned the name and everything. But I was like, when I moved in, I'm like, it isn't going to be my duty. To like my I'm going to become best friends with this cat or die trying. And like I did everything. Like I buy treats at the grocery store every time I go for. I would like just sit there and I researched like how to get a cat to like you. Like I just Googled it and apparently like long slow blinks are big thing. Like that's like
okay.
Because if cats like close their eyes around you, they feel safe because they're like I can take off predator mode for a second. And
okay.
So I was doing that, all of that, and it took a calendar year, but finally I think Missy is starting to like me. And over the off season, I really made some inroads on her. And the other day, like I was able to, she finally let me pet her belly and all that. But it's funny with cats how they will like be all cuddly or whatever. And then their brain will be like, remember, you're a predator. And they'll be like, oh yeah. And then they'll just like, they'll snap back into like, you know, animal mode. Because I was, you know, like I saw her outside and she, you know, I was like, oh, you're gonna let me pet your belly. And she gave me like a little lick and I'm like, oh, this is crazy. Like before she would just run away. And then like middle of that, like 5 minutes in, she like snapped back into predator mode, like gave me a nibble and then ran under a fence. But like that was a huge highlight. I guess number two would be just like the amount of like running and hiking I did like over the off season. Cause the season gets so busy. You don't have time to really, you know, like do stuff for yourself. Mm-hmm. So throughout the off season, I did like 600 kilometers total.
Wow.
of you know, running and hiking, and I ran through an entire pair, like a pair of running shoes, and it was great. You feel good. And then number three, I don't even know. Like I didn't go anywhere. I just really kind of chilled. I guess number three would be just like being able to cook. You know, like mm-hmm. just being able to
let him cook.
They just let me cook, you know. Number three would be making a new pot of like homemade tomato and meat sauce like every week. Like I always have a big pot of gravy, as the Sopranos
gotcha.
Call it, using, you know, very like San Marzano tomatoes, which are the best tomatoes. No acidity, it's lovely, and I perfected it. So those are my top three highlights. I'm a simple man with simple taste. Yeah. You know.
I will say my number one pet peeve is calling tomato sauce gravy.
Because really?
Yes. Because then what's gravy?
I don't know.
brown sauce? Like
I'm just going from The Sopranos.
Oh, and, I know. And I know it's common.
Yeah.
But it's a huge pet peeve of mine.
It's funny because
as a wasp.
Yeah, and look, I'm not Italian either. I'm Irish. Like it's like, but you know, it's just you have a pot of sauce in my fridge at all times, and it's fun to make. It's great. Yeah. Another one. This is from Michael Amato at Amato_Mike, and this I guess is it can be for both of us, but I guess it's more direct to me. It's like, what is your go-to dish to cook?
I have a whole like cycle of things that I cook, but I would say I enjoy doing a roast chicken with like mashed potatoes and gravy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That is just
that's a good like Sunday night dinner when I have time to like
a Sunday roast.
Yes.
Yeah. That is fantastic. To cook? Or my go okay, this is go to where it's more like go to is more of like the like you're in a rush or like you're just like on autopilot and you're like this is my go to. So it used to be it usually revolves around pasta for me because that's just like it's good, it's filling, it's easy. And it used to be like penne alla vodka, where I would basically just like you dice up, you know, an onion and just as much garlic as you want. You throw it in there. You get a can of tomatoes. You throw it in there, a bunch of Parmesan cheese, some paprika, chili flakes, basil, and then a bunch of cream in there as well, and you just mix it together, and it becomes like a tomato cream sauce, and you put in a bunch of, I never have like vodka on hand, so I was always just use like pasta water because it has the same starch content, so it works well. My one now, though, is and then I add chicken to it, like just like, I'd grill up like two or three chicken breasts and throw it in there, and then you have a meal for like, you know, a couple days. Okay. It's great. My one now is pasta aglio olio, which is very easy to make, and it's great, which is spaghetti, usually like a pasta that can get emulsified together, and you cut up basically like you basically slice like an entire head of garlic, like peel them, but you can slice them. You put them in there in some olive oil, and they until they're getting sort of fragrant and like a little bit brown, and then you toss the spaghetti in there, and then you sort of mix it all together. And then you put like a bunch of Parmesan cheese in there and some pasta water in there, so it gets all emulsified, and then you add some chili flakes as well, and then you put a bunch of parsley in there. Mix it together, and it is just like it's divine. And basically, like the sauce is just olive oil.
Nice,
but it's like it's light and it's flavorful. And again, I also toss a bunch of chicken in there, so it's lovely. I might make when I get home. It's terrific. So yeah, that's my go-to. I would say because it's just it doesn't take very long and it's easy. Like I ate that before like Leafs games, like nights last year a lot, just because it was easy to be like I finished my piece. I got like an hour. Like all right, let's blah, blah, and then we're good to go.
Right on.
Yeah. All right, this next one is from Keish at Keish_LWG. What's your favorite animal?
Favorite animal? Mm-hmm. I think hippos are slept on.
Yeah,
I don't think people talk about hippos enough.
Baby hippos.
Yeah.
Like anytime a zoo posts content about their baby hippos, smashing that like button.
Right. Yeah, I just think people don't talk enough about hippos.
They don't.
Yeah.
They're also awesome. Like, they're the killers of the...
Totally.
Like...
They'll get you more than lions.
Oh, yeah, they'll get you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of echidnas.
I love echidnas.
They just kind of walk around. Like they don't care about anything. I'm a big fan. I love elephants, man. Like I would love to become like best friends with an elephant. Cause like they would, like they have the mental capacity to like be best friends with someone.
Fair.
And like, I also love like they have the capacity to be petty. Like there was a famous story. I think it happened like this past year maybe where like, an elephant, like a mother elephant, like a hunter, like shot, like a poacher, like shot their child and killed their baby elephant. And then that hunter died. And the elephant like traveled like 4,000 miles to just stomp on the grave of that lady. Like,
wow.
I think it was a lady poacher. Like, don't mess with elephants, but they are so intelligent. They don't forget. I love them. They're great. This is from The Hockey News, at The Hockey News.
Okay.
Great. I think it's a great account that you should follow. Best Batman villain.
Like this in might the movies, not, I guess?
I would say just like in general, but like, I want to make this sort of a difference here. It's not the best, it's not your favorite Batman villain.
Right.
It's the best one.
Okay. Well, if I'm going just best, then I would say the Joker because he is everything that Batman is not. Mm-hmm. You know, Batman is like, well, a rich guy that's very like, controlled in his own way until it comes to the actual invention and everything, whereas the Joker is complete anarchy.
Yes.
And so that's why he's the perfect foil.
Yeah, it's all, you know, you're the Batman is as Joker says it in one of the most famous stories, like, you're just one bad day away from being me.
Right.
That's what it says. I would say, okay, like, Joker obviously is my favorite. Like, but I do think there's also a lot of Joker saturation. Like,
oh, totally.
Batman has the best rogues gallery of any superhero. Like, yeah. Like Spider-Man is the only one who even comes close. But I would, when it comes to best, I look at, like, tragic backstory. I look at, you know, like, what makes a villain. And controversially, I'm going Mr. Freeze.
Okay.
And this is why. Because Mr. Freeze is... He's got his backstory is basically that his wife, he's a scientist, and his wife gets this disease that like is in, like, you know, like incurable, and he's searching for a cure. So he puts her on like so when he's working for this company, he puts her in a cryo freezing state so he can try and find a cure. So she's basically in stasis, so he can try and find a cure and cure her just so they can live together because he loves her. Mm. But while he's working there, the owner of the company. Like tries to steal his technology, and basically it's an accident that turns him into a guy who has to be in a freeze suit all the time. Mm-hmm. And just I guess it just happened to be coincidence. His last name is Freeze as well.
Right.
But like, he's not necessarily like a villain in the sense that like the Joker will like rob a bank and be like, haha, I'm chaos, and you know,
yeah.
like you know, he's not necessarily a bad guy. Everything he does is to save his wife. Like everything he does. Like, if he robs a bank, he does it to get money so he can fund building the technology to save his wife's life. Like
yeah.
All of that is, and it's very tragic. Like, there's a great scene in the animated series, basically, where we're getting nerdy here, but like
now we're getting nerdy.
We're getting nerdy. Yeah, yeah. But like a couple years in the future, like his wife gets cured, and it turns out that like they just like their marriage falls apart, or whatever. And so the entire series is him just going around to like. To people who've created like beautiful works of art or their life's work and just like destroying them, to be like I lost the thing I love so now you will too,
right.
Kind of thing. But like I find that so much more interesting than like the Joker just being like I'm the Joker baby, like I'm
yeah.
crazy, like you know. I just find like a great villain is kind of like tragic backstory, and also like do you really blame him for like robbing a bank to fund money to save his wife's life? Like
right.
You know, the best kind of villain is the one that like. They're like, oh, they might have a point. It's either like pure evil, like the Joker, where it's
yeah.
like I can really hop onto like the revenge, like the
yeah,
John Wick
yeah.
villains, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just pure evil. They're not like, oh, we might be in the right. Like, no, there's no virtue. It's like, and you want to see them die.
Right.
You know, whereas like with the other villain, like in Mr. Freeze, where it's like, I kind of see his point, you know?
Yeah.
And so I can't really root against him, and it brings you back. So that, anyway.
Yeah,
next one is from Norman at Norman _LJR. Which movie or song do you wish you could watch or hear for the first time again?
We can do
movie and song. I guess
movie
we'll do that.
And song.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
Because you just go song. I know that, but I think we should do movie and song to spice it up a little bit.
Yeah, I would say "Waiting Room" by Fugazi
okay.
for the song, just because you know the first time I heard it, it led to like changing my life and like introducing me to like a whole world of underground music. And then for movie, to see it the first time again, I would say The Handmaiden.
Really?
Whoa. Yeah.
You could have given me 500 guesses for your answer. I would not have guessed that.
It was so good that I would love to see it again without knowing what happened and how it unfolded.
I have to even look. Oh, yeah. Okay. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's great. Those are both really great answers. Mine are more like, not because And I do love the song, I'm going to say, but more just because I would give anything to hear Gangnam Style again for the first time.
Interesting.
Just because, like, back in the day, like I remember, you know, the Gangnam Style craze. It was just so much fun.
Uh-huh.
Like, everyone was loving it. There was no, like, is Psy problematic or anything. Like, I don't even know anything about Psy, but it's
right.
like, I feel like if that happened now, it would be like, yeah, but Psy did this back in, you know, like, there would be a bunch of stuff. Whereas, like, it was just like there's this guy, and it's a great, catchy song. There's a great viral dance you can do to it, and everyone was doing it. Your mom was doing it. It you know, like all of that, and it was just, and it's also like if I'm at a party and you put Gangnam Style on, party just like leapt up a bunch of notches. Like I would love to be able to be like to hear like boop 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 like for the first time, be like, what is this melody? Like that would be great. And then for me, a movie I would love to see for the first time again would be 100% Parasite.
Oh yeah,
because I knew. I heard nothing but amazing things about Parasite, but I knew zero about the plot. Like, I think
which
that
is good.
That was the best way to do it.
Yes.
I knew literally nothing about the plot. I had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
And going into that movie, look, Parasite's been out for long enough that you should have seen it. Like, when they go down into the basement and you realize that, like, the maid and her husband have been living there.
Yeah.
I want to be able to experience that feeling again and be like, what? Like, a movie going from being, like, very good to being like, this is, and to this day I will say, like, this is the best movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, in my opinion, like, from a craft perspective,
mm-hmm.
like, it's up there on my favorites, but it's not my favorite. Uh-huh. Take a wild guess what my favorite is. But, like, Parasite, from a technical perspective, is the best movie I've ever seen. So I would love to see that again. That would be great. This next one is from David Alter, at Dalter.
Okay.
Best running / walking outdoor route.
Oh. I don't do that, so...
Yeah, but, like, hey, if you ever go on a walk or something in Toronto, what's your favorite place? What's your favorite place
to cruise? I just walk around my neighborhood.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the Danforth is, not to dox you or anything, but the Danforth is lovely. I love to walk around that, yeah. For me, I have three. I used to live more West End, so I would do Lakeshore, West End, like, go all the way up to Ontario Place and keep going. But there's a lot of, like, next to a highway walking there, even though it's, like, right next to the lake, so that's a little rough. I have two that I do a lot now. The one main one, when I was going on, like, you know, my 30-kilometer, 35-kilometer, like, odysseys during the off-season, was going sort of down Lakeshore East and then going all the way down to Cherry Beach, following the Leslie Street Spit, and then going to Tommy Thompson Park and just following it all the way out to the Lighthouse Point, which is the farthest they go. That is gorgeous. Tommy Thompson Park is, I'm not sure if anyone knows about it, but in Toronto, it used to be an industrial site that they were like, no, we're not going to produce anything industrial here anymore. It's going to be like a giant nature park. Dogs aren't allowed in because there's an ecosystem there and dogs could, like, you know, interrupt it.
Yep.
And they basically just left it. So it almost looks like The Last of Us because there's, like, structures there, but, like, there's tons of weeds and stuff growing over it. But it has something like 400 bird species in it. It's all just, like, it's all gorgeous. And then there's trails there and a trail, like the pedestrian trail, it goes right along, like, the lake. Like, you can see nothing but blue out there, and it's gorgeous. I love it.
Cool.
The second one is, I'm a big fan of, like, architecture, and the most beautiful houses are in, like, you know, like, the area around Riverdale Park, or Riverdale Farm, sorry?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, when I go at night, because I can't necessarily do those these days, because there's work to do, so I'll just do, like, 10 or 12 kilometers at night, and I go up there, and the houses are gorgeous. Like, I try and look in from the street into any of them. But also they have huge hills. So I'll run up the hills, which are helpful. Whereas, like, the Leslie Street Spit at Tommy Thompson Park, they're more straight.
Yeah.
But, like, those are both gorgeous. I would recommend both of you to not talk to me if you ever see me out there doing them, but to go do them yourselves because it's lovely. So I'll do that. Another one is, this is another one, did you find where your wife went? That's very funny.
You gotta vet these ones.
Just hilarious.
Let's do one more.
Let's do one more, okay. Where is it? Oh, I lost the page. Okay, here we go. If you could, this is from Mike C. the Leafs fan, favorite food / dish.
Oh. Any kind of, like, American barbecue.
Yeah.
Whether it's, like, pulled pork or ribs or brisket. And I have to have it, like, in the States.
Yes.
Because they do it low and slow. They do it proper. So any kind of barbecue like that.
Yeah, that's
good. Or pad thai.
Pad thai is great.
Because it's a complete meal.
Yeah. Look, it's got the carbs, the protein, everything you need in it. The vegetables. Yeah, it's tough because, like, I love, like... Like, just, like, a bucket of fried chicken would be great. Love that.
Sure.
But I also love, like, just the most high-quality Italian food is amazing. Like, fresh ingredients, all that. Greek food's amazing, too. I don't know if I have, like, one favorite food or dish. It's tough. Like, what I would say is, and I would pose this as our last question, like, death row meal. Like, you're on death row, you get one last meal.
Yeah.
What would you do?
Yeah, I would definitely
give me the lineup.
Yeah. Ribs, wings, fries, Dr. Pepper... And, like, some sort of, like, brownie with ice cream on top as dessert.
I would do, like KFC, mm. or Popeyes, either one. Do like a really good pizza. I would say like a home cooked like ziti, like baked ziti. Oh, that would be amazing. And then also, I'm a big fan of like Chinese food. Like I love like Americanized Chinese food. Yeah. Like when you would get like manchu wok. If literally I would replace KFC with just like a bucket of like honey garlic chicken from like Panda Express, like manchu wok, and like and also like their lo mein noodles or whatever. Like right. I would go to town on that. That would be amazing. I want to say as a man, be like steak as rare as it gets, like glass of scotch. Like nah, I would go to town on that. That'd be amazing. Yeah. So that's our mailbag episode. That is terrific. Ryan, we'll obviously be back next week to tee up the start of training camps to get everything going because the season, I believe it's 21 days away.
There you go.
So we're getting close. But yeah, until then, obviously go to thehockeynews.com for all our lovely journalistic endeavors. We have all the team sites. Go there, all the podcasts. And yeah, enjoy it. We'll be back next week.